Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Grim and Bloody Podcast. This show is a presentation of horror, thriller, and suspense, and is intended for a mature audience. Join us at your own risk.
Welcome to the Grim and Bloody Podcast. My name is Kevin Nicholson, horror writer for HorrorNews.net, We Belong Dead magazine, Scary Monsters, and so forth. And with us is our usual crew of Joe Flynn and Al Omega. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Fantastic. And everyone else?
Al Omega, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Let me do this officially. Al Omega, the award-winning host of the Creature Feature Show, seen everywhere that you could possibly stream a television series.
Thank you. I'm listening to you say hi, Joe, and I think, wow, sounds like a new drink. I want to try that one. Probably a little sweet and sour. I like margaritas. I make the new hi, Joe.
And let me throw out that Joe Flynn is the equally award-winning creative horror host. And missing is Anthony Durown, who is currently taking his family to that horror show to end all horror, you know, horrors, Disneyland, where he's going to be dealing with the terror of Mickey and Minnie Mouse. And with us today, we have one of, an iconic personality. We have the actor. I'm sure you have many other hats, Alan Danziger. This year is the 50th anniversary of a certain iconic classic film called Texas Hacking something or other, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre of Alan Danziger, who played Jerry on the original film. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm having the time of my life. Having a great time. Just got back from the CreepyCon convention in Ontario, California, I guess almost a couple of weeks ago, and just had a fantastic time. And the fans were terrific, and we were very warmly received, and we signed a lot of autographs and took photos, and just had a great time.
So let's talk about kind of how it all started. How did you become involved? Were you part of the, just the casting call process for Texas Chainsaw Massacre? How did you come into Toby Hooper's orbit?
Well, the interesting thing is that I did not study drama. I didn't take any acting classes, and some of the reviews of the movie about me bear that out. But I met Toby in a social setting, and actually I was doing social work, and I've got a master's in social work and actually a master's in social psychology. So that was what I was doing, and I did some volunteer work with folks, poor folks in East Austin, and I met a couple by the name of David and Amy, who ostensibly the movie was about. And the movie was called Eggshells. And it basically was like a psychedelic, hippy-dippy movie that reflected Austin in the 60s. And it was really an interesting movie and a lot of interesting techniques that Toby displayed. But anyway, they asked if they could shoot a couple of scenes with me at the time. I was married and my son was like 8 months old and he's in the movie. And so they shot a scene and they liked it and they kept adding stuff for me to do. And so actually I'm in that movie throughout it. Well, the movie came out and I think about 30 people saw that movie. It went nowhere. And so that was the end of it. And I didn't hear from them for about 4 years. And then I got a phone call. I'm not sure I don't remember if it was from Toby or from Kim. And they said they'd written this movie. I think the working title back then was Head Cheese or Leatherface. And they asked if I'd come in and and read the script, and they wanted me to play this character, which, as you know, is Jerry, I guess, the wiseacre van driver in the movie. And so that's really how it happened. And I mean, the clothes in the movie are my own clothes. A lot of the lines that I think are the funny lines are really my own lines. They just went with it. And so so began the odyssey of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But I mean, none of us knew that it was going to turn out to be a cult classic, and now just a classic. So much so that I think it's going to be shown for our 50th anniversary at the Museum of Modern Art in August.
Wow. Now, during filming on this, I asked this for actors and directors who you know, who are attached to iconic you know films. Was this something that, did you ever have a moment where you said, there's going to be something about this that fans will like? There's going to be, you know, something. Or are you unprepared to seem like Nostradamus?
Yeah, whatever Nostradamus is or who he was. Yeah. I mean,
a fortune teller, a future teller. Yeah.
I mean, back then, I think all of us didn't think anything was going to happen. In fact, I remember one time Toby called me in to see some of the rushes, and he said, Alan, what do you think I can do, you know, to improve the movie? And I stupidly said, have the seats facing away from the screen. And he didn't particularly like that. He didn't like that.
I think that's awesome.
And he never called me back. But the editing of the movie, the addition of that prologue that John Larroquette does, the name change from Head Cheese to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that was brilliant. And then the score, you know, the music, the sound effects, all of that, and the tightening it up and editing, it turned that movie into, you know, what people say, what Quentin Tarantino refers to it as, a perfect movie. So there you go.
I like when I remember reading something about John Larroquette saying that he got paid in this for this film with weed.
Probably so.
Probably. Because, hey, back in those days.
Which
to
me,
awesome.
Kind of, because I look at Toby Hooper as kind of a, in some senses, kind of a gonzo, a maverick filmmaker, you know, who. He's often talked about when because he's greatly known for doing horror films. So he's often talked about he wants to push, to keep pushing the envelope, to keep pushing, pushing the thrill out to the, you know, to the audience. So I can see him, you see him working in trucks without permits and going through and doing the film kind of on the fly. It seems like that's the kind of guy that he was. Was there anything to that?
Oh yeah, I mean the whole thing was on the fly.
Yeah.
I mean, picture Austin, Texas in August. You know, it's like 110 degrees, and being in a van, you know, with him and a cigar and lights and whatnot, no air conditioning, and it was brutal. You know, so it was like being in an oven, as well as the scenes in the house at the dinner scene, you know, where you've got rotting food, rotting clothes. I mean, it was brutal, but it was, the way it comes off on the screen is very believable. So in some ways, I guess he knew what he wanted to get, you know, what he wanted to see happen. And I think it all came together.
Those of us that have worked in film realize that all the best movies are done exactly this way. No permits, let's just go in there and make that movie and hope something comes out of it. Well, maybe that's not exactly how it's supposed to be made, but it happens a lot, I've noticed.
Well, back in, you know, this is, we're talking about, the movie was shot in 73 and, yeah. You know, shot on a shoestring, you know, none of that stuff you could do today, you know, but, the dinner scene, I think, went on, but there's different stories about it, anywhere from 20 or 24 hours to 32 hours straight. So, I mean, by the end of it, I mean, the actors, everybody, they were just wiped out.
I mean, there's a story about Gunnar Hansen And his final scene where he's sort of dancing with a chainsaw out there in the sunset was so angry at the producer that he was hoping that he would accidentally behead him with the chainsaw. That's why he's spinning around so hard.
I think he's just so tired. I think you're right. I think that's been well established. Plus, he couldn't see. You know, I mean, it was basically blind when he was doing that. But all of those things that that Gunner did, I mean, it's just amazing. Because really, he was a gentle giant. He was just a very sweet guy, very funny guy, very bright guy. And I mean, we didn't know each other while the movie was made. In fact, I never saw him in costume until I got killed. But after the movie, we became good friends, and he stayed with me the summer before he moved to Maine. And we stayed very good friends up until his demise.
Now, I found it interesting in reading that he was actually, Leatherface was actually given lines of dialogue in this film, and what they call gibberish. And then Toby would sit with Gunner, tell him what the lines meant in the act, and Gunner had to figure out how to say it without actually speaking. But then Hooper, the way that he is, stops the take. That whole thing with when the old man comes comes running in and starts yelling about the door so forth. Well, Hooper comes walking in and says, "There's way too much intelligence in the character, so we got to redo it."
Right. No, I believe that. So I mean, all you hear are these weird sounds, like pig sounds or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
But that was Toby was that kind of guy was he the kind of guy that basically just wanted to turn the horror film world on his ear?
I think so.
A little different.
Saw that Eggshells didn't go anywhere, and they just got the idea that if they want to make a movie that's going to mean anything or do anything, horror was the genre. And between he and Kim, I mean, they did a masterful job of getting it down, and filming it. And Toby did a beautiful job. I mean, it's really beautifully shot. And we owe a lot of that, I guess, to Daniel Pearl, who was the cinematographer. He was in his 20s when he did that. I think that was his first feature film. Did a beautiful job, and he since went on to direct Michael Jackson, Bruce Springsteen, Mariah Carey. I mean, he's had a fantastic career in the music videos.
And, very true.
And just a terrific guy. I mean, all of the people really from the movie, went on to do some really great things. I mean, Ron Bozeman, the producer, won an Academy Award for Silence of the Lamb.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ted Nicolai, the sound guy, went on to a career, doing horror films. And I mean, just about everybody did something. Probably except me. I mean,
well, that John Larroquette guy did something, didn't he?
Yeah.
Go on to do something.
Primitive.
Yeah, he's done some things. And
but and he's one of the, I will say this about John, and maybe you can attest to this, Alan. John Larroquette, of all the actors out there, actors generally, a lot of them have an ego where they generally put down the horror films that they did. If they did a horror film to start their career, they try to fake like they ignore it, like that never happened, or it was just, or they poo-poo it. John Larroquette is not like that at all. He's the guy, he flat out said, yeah, I was happy to do Texas Chainsaw Massacre, was happy to do the narration for it, and I got paid with weed.
Well, weed was expensive back then, too.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, and given what's happened to the movie, why wouldn't he want to be part of it, at least for the original? Now, I think on those some later ones, I mean, the ones that had Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger, they didn't particularly care for it, but their careers were taking off, so I guess they had their own take on it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, by the way, Alan, I had a question about Ed Neal and his crazy character that you and the friends all pick up on that lonely, lonely highway.
That was a big mistake. Big mistake.
Yeah, I would say too.
In fact, after that scene, I stopped picking up hitchhikers forever.
And see, so this is one of those cautionary tales where you tell folks, don't do this, what I did on camera. Don't.
Exactly.
Now,
don't do what I do.
Now talk about Marilyn Burns for a minute. What a gorgeous lady. And this is one of her iconic film roles, this and Rabid. What was it like working with Marilyn?
Well, to be honest with you, I really didn't know her, and there was very little, I guess, scenes, where there was room for us to be affectionate with each other.
Okay.
Sadly, I think we missed the golden opportunity. So, and she had a lot of things going on, which I think I wasn't aware of. So I honestly thought that she was a little aloof during the making of the movie, but it wasn't until after, years later, that I got to see her, and she was just a doll. She's just a sweet, sweet, wonderful lady. And we became, pretty good friends later on when we started doing, some of these reunion shows. Mm-hmm. And she's beloved. I mean, even to this day, when she comes up, everybody has a nice thing to say about it. And I totally agree with that.
Fantastic. Fantastic stuff. And I watch her in this film, and I watch her in Rabbit, and she's just somebody that you can't take your eyes off of.
Oh yeah, I mean, she was a wreck when that movie was over. I mean, take after take. I mean, she was just. I mean, that movie just about destroyed her.
Well, she was doing. I remember she was doing scenes I'd read where she was completely going through underbrush, where she was getting cut fiercely, by the branches. In fact, you see some of the scenes.
Right,
blood that's on her clothing is hers.
Yeah, they actually cut her finger in that scene where John Dugan is sucking the blood out of her finger. That was real blood. They had to get it done, and they actually cut her finger.
That's one of those things where you ask, where somebody leans into her ear and asks the question, "You wanted to be in show business, huh?"
That's right. That's right.
Makes you really, really think. But every now and again, you get that actress that goes, "Yeah, let's do this," and then you got a winner.
Yeah.
So, talk to us a little bit about what's going on now with this year, with the 50th anniversary. Gosh, this film is just loved by millions, and 50 years later, we're talking about anniversary. Anniversary presentations. We're talking. I mean, this thing is getting as much more notoriety than it's ever had before.
I totally agree. I mean, I'm in town. I'm in Austin next month. I start shooting my own movie called The Weed Hacker Massacre, that I'm a producer of, and that's in March. And starting in April, I'm going. I'm everywhere, a different place every month. I'll be in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'll be in Virginia Beach. I'll be in Connecticut. There's also New York. There's talk about a film festival called Beyond Fest. They're talking about doing the definitive celebration of our 50th anniversary. And that would be back in California. I think there's talk of us going to London and then some other places. So I think El Paso, I mean, just about you name it, that's where I'm going to be going somewhere. So it's exciting, and the fans have been terrific. I mean, they're coming out and celebrating with us, and they're just so gracious and so happy. Fortunately, that I'm still above ground, and many of us are still above ground. So it's all good. It's all good.
Well, I'll tell you, we've had some of your cohorts, some of your we had Ray Spivey on previously with Storage Locker, and it got on the subject of yourself, and Ray was like, "You've got to have Alan on your show. He is like this awesome. The stories that he's got in all this stuff. You're pretty popular right now with movies like Storage Locker, Cannibal Comedian.
Cannibal Comedian. That was really a hoot. And I was in North Carolina a few weeks ago where they had a showing of Cannibal Comedian, which I had not seen. I just heard, you know, the part that I did, but they gave me billing on the front, billing in the back, and they presented me with the, you can't see it, the Mighty Icon Award. So that was really neat. I got that on stage at the Film Fest in North Carolina. And Ray was the one that wrote the script for the Weed Hacker Massacre. And he's a terrific guy. And I think this movie's gonna be, I think it's gonna be something. In fact, we've got Grandpa John Dugan is in it. Parrish Randall is in it. Sean Hates, who wrote and directed A Cannibal Comedian. Mm-hmm. And a musician by the name of Britton Buchanan, who was on The Voice some years ago, was runner-up at the age of 18. In fact, he even wrote the ballad of Chainsaw Jerry for me.
Nice.
And he's writing in the movie.
What are some of the lyrics from that? Come on.
No, I can't. You can look it up. But it's a great song. It's a great song.
Yeah, Google it, Kevin.
I can imagine.
Do some work. Do some
the
work.
Ballad of Chainsaw Jerry.
Right.
So, what do you think about the power of Texas Chainsaw Massacre? What does it tap into for fans?
I think it's the notion of it's so believable. And the fact that it took place in Texas, you know, I mean, I have people that come up to me and say, it's a true story. I know these people. I know Leatherface. I know where he lived. And I said, no, not really. Because they said, yes, he did. I said, I'm in the movie. he doesn't exist. So it's that kind of believability. And you see it on the screen. You see the sweat, you see the kills, you know, I mean, I think I was voted number 8 on the all-time screams when the actor didn't know what was going to happen to him.
Right. And that's true, because no one knew what was going to happen to their characters in that film.
Even the director didn't know what was going to happen.
That's right.
They were changing it day by day, you know?
Day by day. Oh, yes, you gotta love this stuff. And, you know, you talked about the dinner scene and the heat and I'm sure the what pieces of meat that were props still didn't smell too good, and I'm sure whatever pieces of meat that were real smelled even worse. But even on
big stuff, there was live stuff, there was, you know, fake stuff, and a lot of stuff, the way that movie looks, the whole idea of it and how it comes across is the work of Robert Burns, another brilliant guy who did the props and the set design for that movie. And sadly, he also passed away way too early. And so it's just a conglomeration of just some of these fantastic people that came together to make this movie, the, you know, what it is today.
Yeah, what I'm saying was, though, that even on really big movies like Harry Potter, they were filming and they had to do one of the banquet scenes for so long, the food went rancid. So they're supposed to be eating and enjoying food with all this rotted food in front of them that stank. And, you know, that I'm sure helped for the general atmosphere of the entire movie, though, in this case.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, I think Gunnar talks about where he actually threw up on a few times.
Oh, man.
Good old Gunner, you know, and that's the thing. And I was gonna ask, like, you know, I was gonna ask, what was your first thoughts of seeing Gunnar Hansen as Leatherface?
I'm sorry, what? What was the question?
The question was, what was your take on seeing Gunnar Hansen as Leatherface and all right. that?
Yeah, well, the way I had it worked out was I had them blindfold me. I sat outside before the action, and so I did not see Leatherface in his in his outfit until the very moment that I get killed. So I'm blindfolded, what I refer to as my nod to the Stanislavski method, which I know nothing about. I don't even know what that is. But I like the name of it. I like the sound of it. And so I had you guys do that. So they blindfolded me until they were ready. They took the blindfold off. I go into the vestibule and then into the kitchen. Then I see the hook. Then there's the freezer. And I run to the freezer and I open it up and she pops out. And then comes Leatherface. I just let out a blood-curdling scream and ran out of the house. Whereupon Toby yelled, "Cut!" And he came over to me. He put his arm around me. He said, "Alan, that's one of the best screams I'd ever heard. But you got to wait for him to come into the shot. You know, with the sledgehammer." I was so freaked out. They had to shoot that scene several times. And finally, two grips behind me grabbed me by the belt loops and pulled me down just as that sledgehammer comes down on my head.
Yeah, and that was a great scene in the film. You know, that whole movie is fantastic. I loved it.
Oh, good, good. And, you know, I mean, I took that shot 50 years ago, and to this day, I'm still getting headaches. So, I mean, it was...
Well, you know,
That's the consummate actor there.
Yeah, yeah.
You're still feeling the pain 50 years later.
Exactly.
Bruce Campbell talks about one of his early pieces, and I mean, he's still a teenager at this point, and I guess he had to jump into a creek or something, and it wasn't very deep, and he jumped in head first and clocked himself really good on a rock and came up seeing stars. His first question was, "Did we get the shot?" And that's what movies are all about. It happens that way sometimes.
That's an actor for you.
Well, yeah. I remember on The Exorcist when Ellen Burstyn gets put into that harness where she's thrown across the floor. She said for years she had back troubles because of that shot.
Yeah.
And she said that was, you know, it was not surprising that she called Bill Friedkin a son of a bitch after after doing that. But
Tom Cruise broke an ankle, Harrison Ford, I mean all of these guys. Sure. When you name it, Robert De Niro, you know, during making of the 10-1, most of them got hurt doing it.
Yeah. Exactly. All for the shot.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as that goes. Now, if only you could have been I would think it might have gone off better for you that the sledgehammer, hit if you had been paid in weed like Larroquette did, you know.
No, I wasn't into that. Yeah. That wouldn't work.
I was going to say it would have taken care of some of the pain anyway.
We got paid so little anyway, so what are you going to do? The real massacre took place after the movie because the distributors were mafia. So that's where the real massacre.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is there a story to tell about that?
Well, I know, you know, the story is that the movie comes out, it's rocketing up the charts, you know, in Variety, with a bullet, it beats out Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee. We all thought that, you know, we hit the brass ring, and then we start getting, you know, royalty or whatever checks. And it was enough to go, you know, get a couple of McDonald's hamburgers, a Big Mac. And so we said, what's wrong with this picture? And then what was wrong was the distributors were mafia.
Oh, wow.
And it took years for us to get for the Vortex people to get the, you know, get the movie back. But by then, millions were gone. Millions were gone.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, so it's actually by going to... you know, these conventions and stuff that I don't have to apply for food stamps now in my later years.
Or get those Big Macs.
I know, yeah. I bet those Big Macs tasted pretty good back then. Yeah. You know.
Back then it did taste good, yeah.
They had real meat in them.
That's right. Well, we are so very glad that you had that you have this opportunity to go out and see fans and to do the conventions. The conventions do a great thing in that. And I'm continuing to be just wowed by how popular the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is, some, you know, 50 years later.
Yeah, I mean, and you're getting new fans. I mean, we've got fans from as young as, you know, 6 years. I mean, that's amazing because when the movie came out, I took my son, who was, I think, about 5, just to see his dad and the coming attractions. And now, 50 years later, he's still in weekly therapy. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sorry, kid.
That's good parenting.
What's that?
That's good.
Oh, would you say that's good therapy?
Yeah.
No, good parenting.
Oh, parenting. Okay.
Yes.
So, all the best. So what do you have? I mean, you talked some about what you are currently doing. My gosh, you've got your own film, The Weed Whacker Murders.
Weed Whacker Massacre, yeah.
Massacre.
And I play a sheriff in the movie, and John Dugan is my deputy.
And I want to suggest to you, and I'll put it out to fans out there too, just to maybe get you a vibe of the type of movie that you're doing, take a look at 1982 Graydon Clark's film called Wacko, which is a story of, I think it's out on DVD and so forth, and it's a story of a cop played by Joe Don Baker who's chasing the lawnmower killer.
I love Joe Don Baker.
And he's one of my favorites, and this is like a tongue-in-cheek, like, kind of spoof of the, you know, the slasher film back then, and the character is called The Lawnmower Killer.
That sounds great.
It's fun. It's a fun one. Okay. And if you like Joe Don Baker, you will love that.
I love him in Walking Tall, Buford Crusoe.
Sure.
And he's also in Cape Fear. No, he's great. I think he's still alive too. I think so.
He's also in he has a wonderfully sinister role in the movie Charlie Varick, Don Siegel's film with Walter Matthau. He gets to play a psychopath in that film, and he's just good at everything.
Wow,
and whatever he does.
Yeah, it's cool.
But Alan has been a terrific. Guys, have any further questions?
No, Alan, thank you so very much.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys. And let me know how I can get a link to this so I can let people know.
Oh, absolutely. Joe, ask your social media question.
We can't forget that one. Alan, where can people find you on the social media?
I've got my own website, chainsawjerry.com, and then I think you can also Google weedhacker.com or weedhackermassacre.com. And now on my website, there's, you know, a link where you want to order photos, or I've got a talking bobblehead. I got all kinds of stuff.
Sweet.
That they can order online. And I hope they do it, because we need quite a bit of money to produce this movie.
So.
Very true.
The Weed Hacker Massacre.
And I'm sure, as Ryan James told us, that you have a producer for Cannibal Comedian, said that you were one of the guys that had the true sense of humor in Cannibal Comedian. Are we going to see a lot more of that?
I hope so. It's won so many awards, and I think they're getting real close to striking a deal where it'll be able to be playing in theaters or on platforms. Like, it's the whole movie business has changed so much. There's streaming and platforms and all kinds of stuff going on.
So we'll definitely have that, the Alan Danziger sense of twisted humor with that.
There you go. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for having me.
We're
looking forward to come back.
Okay.
Whacker Massacre, man.
Okay.
I know. Let's all get together for the 100th anniversary of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, huh?
Yes, we can do it.
I
just wanted to say that I really enjoyed Cannibal Comedian. I thought that was hilarious.
I did too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Glad you enjoyed it.
And I enjoyed Storage Locker. I've enjoyed. Yeah. I you know I'm looking forward to the Weed Hacker Massacre, and all the success to you and whatever you do in the future. Good luck to you.
Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it. Take care.
Alan, Kevin will send you the link and all that.
Yes.
So when the show's done, he'll send
it to you. Once it's published, I'll send you a link to it, and please share all over your social media, and it'll be great. As soon as it's done, I'll send it to you.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You have a great night.
Take care, Alan.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.